Before the show starts, we just wanted to mention a few things for you to think about. Firstly, Peter, Tim and I are amazed at the support we get from you and all of our guests. Thank you so much. But to keep Extended a good listen, we need to carry on attracting top quality guests. And that means demonstrating the power and strength of Extended and its reach into the aerospace world. So please help us grow the number of people listening and grow the number of subscribers to the programme. Tell your friends, put a flyer up on your notice board, or if you have a website or a blog, please feel free to add a link to our show. If you do this, we'll help promote your aerospace blog or your website and can even give you a mention on Extended. If you need a logo or a PDF, just let us know. We have one other request. We love doing this, but obviously it does come at a cost, and we produce Extended entirely from our own resources. If you look at aviation-extended.co.uk, you'll see a whole bunch of Amazon links on there, whether it's for specific products or just to search and buy anything at all. If you are going to use Amazon to make a purchase, whether it's for you or as a gift for a friend, please do so through our website. It costs you nothing extra, and it could help provide us with a modest allowance to help keep Extended sustainable. Without you, we have no programme. So thank you so much for being part of the journey. And if you can help keep us ETOPS, we'd be extremely grateful. Back to the show.
This is XTP Media.
Hello everybody, it's me, Mrs. G, aka Claire Opsbird. You're listening to Extended for the best in aerospace news, views and interviews. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 21 of Extended. And joining me today are my co-presenters, editor of Global Aviation Resource, Gareth Stringer.
Hello, Peter. Hello, everybody.
Hi, and returning from Dubai, editor-in-chief of Aerospace Magazine, Tim Robinson.
Hello there.
And also joining us today is a guest presenter, the challenger herself, Amy Parkin. Amy, welcome to Extended.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. Now, this episode's going to be a little different. Yes, we've got the news, things you never knew about, promoting aerospace, but we decided that we'd take a look at those things that make an excellent AvGeek Christmas present, but also what we really look for in aviation and aerospace products. So we have the Extended 12 Days of Christmas, and we're going to tell you what our favourite products are. But that's not all. Stay tuned, because we are giving some of them away to you. But as always, let's get started by looking at what's caught our eye in aerospace news. And I thought we'd just have a little look back at Dubai, Tim. You spent some time out there, obviously an awesome show, but aerospace changing in terms of orders and how the airlines are working.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it was the first show, Dubai Air Show out at the new venue, which is the Dubai World Central, which is an absolute mega airport under construction outside out there in the desert. Absolutely huge. Really important show for commercial orders. Boeing launched their 777X wide body. They ended up with 342 orders all told, worth some $101.5 billion, as well as some 737 MAX orders in there. You know, $95 billion worth for the 777X. So, you know, big show for Boeing. Airbus did pretty well as well. Didn't make that. They got $44 billion worth of orders. But they got 50 Super Jumbos, 50 orders for the A380 from Emirates again. So again, that was a good show for them. On the military side, it was a little bit more quieter. But we did have, what was interesting there was we did have UK Prime Minister David Cameron out there. And he threw all his weight behind, you know, UK airspace, particularly the Eurofighter Typhoon campaign, you know, which is aiming to get the UEA, United Arab Emirates Air Force, to select Typhoon. Now, they came back at the end of the week. They hadn't got a contract or a deal or signature, but they got, you know, a lot of high-level support, and people are sort of feeling, you know, fairly positive about it. But it's now kind of got into sort of political and industrial factors and things like that. So ball now really is in the UEA's court, but they have, you know, people are behind the scenes seem, you know, sort of fairly positive.
And Tim, just going back to, it was very much a Boeing show. We know it swings and roundabouts because Airbus have had their day. I've got to say, I'm getting a little bit confused by some of the current formats of airliners and the 777X. Where's the 777X fit in? Starting to all look the same, starting to have similar numbers of seating capacity. I'm getting a little lost.
Right, well, the 777X comes in at the sort of high end of the wide bodies. You know, you're looking at something like a 350 to 400 seater airliner, about that right, about that sort of seating. And what they've done with this time is it's going to have, well, possibly even more than 400 passengers. But the big thing with that is it's, you know, the 777X is already best selling. And Boeing are taking this and new hyper-efficient engines and a big composite, you know, lightweight wing. It's going to make it even more you know, efficient. There's also some aerodynamic tweaks. So basically, this sort of revenue-generating wide-body that the airlines love, it's going to get even better. And the closest sort of competitor to that is Airbus with its A350 -1000, which is their kind of largest version of the A350. So that's where the two sort of match up. Now, obviously, the two manufacturers kind of juggle the, you know, kind of tweak the sort of seats and the sort of sizing just to sort of you know, align with their own family, but also to make sure that they haven't left any gaps to the competitors.
Right. Okay. And just going talking about seating. Airbus had a little bit of a faux pas with the campaign they were trying to run on seat width.
Well, it's interesting. Before the air show, they had a campaign for better seat comfort. They'd done some studies, or they actually commissioned some studies with the London Sleep Centre about having an extra inch, going from 17 inches to 18 inches, really makes a difference in the amount of comfort you get and the sleep you get. You know, on the face of that, that looks all well and good, looks pretty sensible. But the problem is that's a bit of the airliner. When you're buying an airline, the airlines keep hold of. You know, they want to decide how many seats they pack in there. So when they, you know, it seemed to come as a surprise for Emirates boss Tim Clark. You know, one of their biggest customers, who said something along the lines of, well, this one came out of the blue, which is airline CEO speak for, you know, what on earth are they doing? And now they've got this problem where they are, you know, having said, well, we want a minimum standard. What happens now if some sort of Chinese airline comes to them and says, you know, hey, you want to buy a A380, you want to put 800 seats in it?
Yeah, interesting.
Box themselves into a little bit of a corner there. You know, airlines are very protective about how many seats they put in. You know, obviously the manufacturers can make recommendations and give them options, but that's a real bit that the airlines, you know, like to keep hold of. You know, they decide they want to do the you know, what's best. And the ongoing trend really is, you know, obviously airlines want to provide comfort, but the ongoing trend is is, you know, putting more seats in the airliners, squeezing more seats in. How do you squeeze more seats in and still keep the same, well, similar levels of comfort?
Typhoon, just going back to talk about the Typhoon, what do you think are the chances of the UAE choosing Typhoon?
It's got a good head of steam behind it. There's some interesting stuff coming through with Typhoon. They didn't manage to fly during the show, but it has since flown. The Typhoon's now flown with Storm Shadow missiles as a flight test. So that's an important milestone. They've got new sort of avionics standard that's going to be done before the end of the year. Flown the Tranche free fighter, I think it was actually last week. So there's all stuff that's coming together that's now making it look a bit a little more attractive, like something happening.
Right.
The pace is increasing, and so the thing I hear is that the Air Force is very impressed with it. They're keen on it, but it's now got to go to the wider industrial sort of factors. Interesting that there's an interesting tie, because the UAE has got, they want to invest in high technology, they want to develop an aerospace industry, and BEA Systems, obviously one of the Eurofighter partner companies, has got a strong UAV tie-up, a strong UAV tech sort of part of its company, and that's also one of the companies in the UAE is also sort of into UAV. So there's an interesting tie-up there if you were to think about where might you invest, or what kind of partnerships could come out of this.
Right, okay. Well, we're going to leave the news there. I know there's lots more on, but we want to get back to the main part of the show. After the break, we'll look at the ETOPS 12 extended products to have and our favourites.
From 066 Super, we need holding for about at least 10 minutes. We have a flaps problem.
From 066 Super, roger. Cancel your approach clearance. Maintain 2,200.
Maintaining 2,200, Air France 066 Super. Los Angeles Tower, France 066 Pan 2,000 feet.
Air France 066 Super, Los Angeles Tower, track the final approach course, maintain 2,000.
Final approach course, 2,000, Air France 066 Super.
Air France 066 Super, flying 250.
Heading 250, France 066.
Air France 066 Super, contact departure 125.2.
Departure 125.2, Air France 66 Pan Pan. Approach Air France 066 Super Pan Pan, good afternoon, 2000 feet, heading 250.
Air France 66 Super, so the approach charge, I'm just going to leave you on a 250 heading for a while, about 10 or 15 miles, will that work for you?
Yeah, that's fine for us, Air France 066 Super Pan Pan.
Okay, I'll probably call you in about 10 miles, unless you call me first, so let you know. Find out what you're going to do, and but for now, I'll just let you figure it out.
Air France 066 Super Pan Pan, thank you. Air France 066 Super Pan Pan, request holding at RAS.
Oh, you have to go into holding, Air France 66 Super, turn left heading 180 then.
Okay, so turning left heading 180, Air France 066 Super Pan Pan.
Air France 66 Super, climb maintain 5,000.
Climb maintain 5,000, Air France 066 Super Pan Pan.
Air France 66 Super, roger. Well, I need the fuel on board, and I would like the sails on board when you get the opportunity. No hurry.
465 passengers, more 2-3 crew, and the fuel on board is 15800 kilos. Air France 066 Super, Pan Pan.
Roger. Air France 66 Super. We're going to take and hold you over to Catalina VOR, which is Sierra X-Ray Charlie. So if you want to put that in your computer, you can expect holding, and it's usually off the 295 radio off of Catalina, but the Earth controller who will be working, it might have a different plan for you. But for now, when you're able, proceed direct to the Catalina VOR, Sierra X-Ray Charlie.
Air France 066 reaching 5,000 on heading 130. We need 10 minutes and the easiest clearance as possible. Air France 066, so as to manage the flaps problem. May we have radar vectoring at 5,000 feet?
Yes, 5,000. Stand by 1 second. Solus 84, making 13,000, turn left to see direct to Los Angeles VOR. Tight turn there. I've been working with this Air France, so tight turn direct to Los Angeles VOR, 13,000. 13,000,
left turn, VOR, southwest,
84. Okay, Solus 84, I think Air France might have taken that. 884, direct to Los Angeles VOR, and 13,000.
Directly to the Los Angeles VOR, 13,000, Southwest 884. I think we got Air France inside below us.
Yeah, he's at 5,000. Air France 66 Super, that clearance was not for you. Fly heading of 130, maintain 5,000.
Okay, heading 130, Air France 066 Super, Boston, maintaining 5,000. That's okay, and we'd have to work a little problem, okay? Thank you.
Yeah, there's no problem as far as working things out. I'll tell the next controller that they already know that you want simple as possible when it comes to the vectors and the holding, so they know everything that's going on. And you can proceed. Can you go direct to the Catalina VOR right now?
I will use spirit.
Okay, proceed direct to the Catalina VOR.
Okay, would you spell the VOR, please, Catalina, which are the letters?
All right, Air France 66, just fly heading 130, and the next controller will just vector you. Just heading 130, contact approach 134.35.
134.35, Air France 066, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, this is Max Flight from Airplane Geeks and the UAV Digest, wishing you a happy and joyous holiday season. I hope great aviation experiences await you in 2014.
So let's look at the extended 12 days of Christmas and 12 products that caught our eye. Now, we've got for you 12 sectors of the industry. I'll give you a quick run through on what they are. And we've chosen one product or one area from each of those that we thought we'd bring to you. So we've got help in the aviation industry, restoration, the best website or online resource, a book, some pilot products, aviation watches, the best local airfield, something for the younger av geek, t-shirts, family day out, gaming and software, and our number one favorite aerospace product. So our 12 days will start with helping the aviation industry. And our first product is a book called Dragons of Thin Air by Doug Worrell, and it's an unusual choice because it's all about the fear of flying. So listen to Doug telling you a little bit about the book.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Some people are afraid to fly. That fact may not surprise you, but the scope of the problem might. There are millions of people who would rather have their teeth pulled than get aboard an aeroplane. It is, in fact, one of the most common fears in our modern world. We all know someone who's afraid to fly. But this podcast is about aviation. Fear of flying seems like a strange topic, right? Maybe not. The aviation community spends a huge amount of energy trying to convince passengers to choose our planes rather than those of our competition, or to choose our flight school over the one across the field, or to buy our airliner over another. In some regards, this is great, as there have been huge product and productivity enhancements over the years because of such competition. But sometimes it's like watching seagulls squabble over breadcrumbs at the beach. What if there were millions of new people that we could re-engage with our industry? New passengers who might choose to fly rather than drive. People who used to fly but now don't. What if we could get them flying again? Wouldn't that grow the pie? Wouldn't that benefit the whole of the aviation industry? Maybe fear of flying isn't such a strange topic after all. But that's an economic argument. There are other issues as well. For example, human compassion. For anybody who has it, fear of flying is horrible. In a globally connected world, not being able to comfortably travel on a plane has real consequences for people, in terms of family, employment, enjoyment of life. A fearful flyer might avoid an overseas holiday, or quit a great job because it requires travel. They might miss the wedding of a friend, or the birth of a grandchild, if these things happen beyond the range of the family car. And sometimes life circumstances occur that force a person onto a plane who doesn't want to be there. That experience can be traumatic. Of course, it's not just the fearful flyer who suffers. The whole family may stay at home if one family member hates flying strongly enough. And it's not just adults who are at risk. Sometimes children learn to be afraid by observing the fears of their parents, or by soaking up the images and messages of the media without a full understanding. The life-limiting baggage of a fear of flying can be passed down through generations. Fear of flying is different for everybody, and it starts in different ways. It might start with a traumatic or misunderstood flight experience, or it might be fueled by soaking up terrifying images on TV. Sometimes a person has had a loss of control or a panic attack sometimes in their life. They might avoid stressful environments for fear of it happening again. Such fear, untreated, can build upon itself. Fear of flying is complex, and it's a fear that doesn't often get talked about. People who don't have it often don't really understand. They might try to help by saying flying is safe, but that doesn't help at all. Workmates may scoff and brush it off with the old line about flying being safer than driving. They're right, of course, but that too doesn't help. Most fearful flyers already know this. The good news is, fear of flying is learned, and it can be unlearned. People aren't born with a fear of flying, and there are some terrific pathways for dealing with it. The gold standard in fear of flying treatment seems to be a multi-pronged approach. One of those prongs is learning about aviation. Learning the facts of the industry, learning about the aircraft, the professionals who fly them, all of the good stuff that makes our industry so safe. Facts like why aeroplanes make funny noises, learning why the wings won't fall off in turbulence, listening to podcasts like this. It's all about increasing knowledge. Sometimes people even learn to fly themselves. What better way to learn about how and why a plane works than to learn to fly? There are some terrific ambassadors for aviation who got into it to treat their own fear of flying. But facts alone are not enough. Everybody knows flying on the airlines is safer than driving a car. That's just a fact, but it doesn't help. Other things are needed too. That's why another important part of the strategy is learning why anxiety can fuel itself into fear and into panic. Learning our own individual symptoms, we can learn skills to stop it from escalating. Anxiety in itself is not a bad thing. In fact, it's a vital survival mechanism designed to keep us alive and quicken our responses. But if allowed to get out of control, it's not helpful. The skills of preventing this emotional escalation can be taught. The third part of the process is experience and exposure. The more we do something, the less dangerous it seems. This can be done in small steps. Step by step, a person can build their confidence in aviation and in their own abilities to handle difficult and new situations. This is about building belief and a confidence in your own strength. Getting someone on a plane is great, but getting them to fly again and again is the real goal. At no stage in this process is there any deception. No truths have been hidden. We're teaching how to deal with the experience and how to be more adaptive in handling anxiety-producing environments. And we're building confidence that we can handle it and it will not escalate out of control. It's important to note that this three-pronged approach, covering knowledge, anxiety awareness and training, and repeated flight exposure, all work together. Attempting repeated flights without having done one's homework may make the situation worse. Here's my confession. My name's Doug and I'm an airline pilot. I love flying. I love the physics of it. I love the engineering of it. I love the dynamic real-world challenge of it. I love looking down at the earth from above. It bothers me that millions of people are afraid of something so amazing. So much so that I've written a book on the topic. A self-help guide, if you will, called Dragons of Thin Air. It's not your average dry textbook, however. Sure, it's got all of the great material you'll find in any top fear of flying course. We'll talk about psychology, such as the nature of fear, and how we can allow anxiety to feed upon itself, and we'll learn some ways to stop this tornado of fear before it gets started. I present a bunch of great info about aircraft, from how they're built, through to how they fly, and how they're maintained. We'll also talk about some of the key triggers of fear, such as turbulence, and the mysterious and troubling noises that people hear when they fly. We'll also talk about some of the physical sensations that you'll feel when you fly. Knowing about these things can reduce a person's tendency to magnify their fear based on the unknown. And we'll touch on some other issues that serve to magnify fear, such as the role of the media in hyping things up to make them seem more dangerous than they really are.
Well, a major scare in the skies after a jet hits a bird, taking out an engine, forcing the pilot to make an emergency landing. Passengers say it was a very scary event.
It was very, very scary.
But I want to reassure you,
none of the 124 people on board was hurt.
Unlike many self-help books, Dragons of Thin Air is fun. I've wrapped all of this great information up in a story. It's a fanciful story about a dragon, a master of fear. His day job is making people afraid, but who, for reasons of his own, decides to help a family of fearful flyers deal with their fear. As it says on the cover, Dragons of Thin Air is a most unusual fear of flying course. I'm not going to tell you that Dragons of Thin Air is the be-all and end-all of fear of flying treatment, but it is a conversation starter. No book alone is going to solve the problem, because dealing with fear of flying is a process. But this process starts with a decision, and requires knowledge, courage, and the support of others. Dragons of Thin Air is one way to start this process. And, despite the cartoons and good humour, I have to tell you that Dragons of Thin Air is not just for kids. The material in it will be of interest to anyone who wants to combat fear of flying. If you or someone you care about is afraid to fly, why not give them a book designed to address fear of flying? Dragons of Thin Air is one, but there are plenty of others too. Search Amazon with Fear of Flying for a few ideas. It could be a great conversation starter and a gift that starts the process of getting them into the air again. There are also many excellent fear of flying courses around the world. If there is one near you and money allows, a real-world fear of flying course could be a fantastic gift that keeps on giving. It's a big, beautiful world, and everybody deserves a chance to enjoy it all. So, as I said at the start of this piece, maybe fear of flying is a topic we should all think about. On every flight there will be people who are afraid. In every car park, in every checkout queue, in every coffee shop, people who might never fly. We, as members of the aviation community, need to take every opportunity to make them welcome, to share our knowledge and our passion, and to help with our judgment, preaching or pontificating, and with compassion and understanding. Simply an awareness of the problem and giving ourselves permission to care and to help will be enough. Getting over fear of flying could be the gift of the year. Thanks, Peter, Tim and Gareth, for the chance to talk about fear of flying and for presenting such a fabulous podcast. Merry Christmas to you and all of your wonderful listeners.
Well, as you know, Doug has been a great supporter of the show. He is a captain of a major airline. He has a great deal of experience of this. Now, I took the opportunity of asking somebody who I know who has a fear of flying to read the book for me. And it was really interesting to get the feedback, because not only did they feel that this was the sort of book that could help them, and on first picking it up, I've got to be honest, I didn't think it would be. But the graphics are quite amusing. They're very clear. They're very easy. The book's very easy to follow. The person who read the book said that they laughed out loud several times when reading it. And when they finished, were ready to see about going on one of these Fear of Flying courses. So that's got to come highly recommended. And I really enjoyed reading through the book too. Amy, you were going to add something.
Yes. When he was speaking about like anxiety and stuff, I don't know, everyone finds it really surprising when I say, but like I have a really, really big fear of flying, and I suffer with two types of anxiety. So when he was like talking in that recording, when I was listening to it, I was just thinking, oh, everything he's saying is so true. But yeah, I really am going to look into buying it and seeing if it helps. But yeah, like everything that he said, the thing that I think found most on point was like when people tell you it'll be fine and it's not going to be fine. That really made sense to me. So I think it might help me by looking into it. And I felt really calm listening to him as well, which was really strange.
We know that Doug worked very, very hard on that recording because he wanted the correct message to get over. So tone of voice was very important. So hopefully he'll be able to use that recording for others who have that fear. Now, we have three copies of the book to give away. So this is day number 12. If you're interested in getting a copy of the book, what you have to do is this. You need to like Doug's Facebook page and also visit him on his website. We'll put links to these on the show notes. Then send us an email with 12 Fear of Flying in the title. That's 12 Fear of Flying in the title with your name and address to x10d@mail.com. Okay, so that's day number 12. Day number 11 was our favourite restoration project. And Amy, you picked this one.
My favourite restoration is Hanley Page Victor XL231 Lusty Lindy. And they're my favourite because I've done a lot with them this year. But yeah, they've really done really well on restoring Lindy and getting her to such a good state to say that she's not a flying aircraft, but she is she's taxi worthy. And I don't know, has anyone else on this panel been to see Lindy?
No, I've not seen her, but I've seen the videos of her doing the taxi runs, which are pretty impressive.
Yeah, someone posted a picture the other day from 1993, and she looks even better now than she did back then. So I think that Team Victor have done quite a good job with her. But yeah, they're definitely my favourite restoration group.
And whereabouts are they based, Amy?
They're based at Yorkshire Air Museum in Elvington. It's near York.
Okay, okay. Now, there's the potential that we might be able to see if we can get something out of the team up there, maybe a T-shirt or something. So if you're interested in that, again, send us an email with 11 Lusty Lindy as the title, your name and address to x10d@mail.com. You need to like their Facebook page and you need to follow them on Twitter. And it goes without saying that you should also be liking us and following us as well. So if you're interested there, that's day number 11. Okay, moving on to day number 10. And this category was our favourite website or online resource. And I don't think it's any surprise that we chose liveatc.net as our favourite online resource. Of course, the website is free, but if you're really interested, they do have an app as well, which is on the iOS platforms, Android and Windows as well. So you can get it on all the main platforms. You hear an awful lot of Live ATC on this program. We use it quite frequently. And if you like it, you can go along and listen to any of the feeds that they have. There's no charge. The only problem for UK listeners is that you won't find any UK feeds, and that's because it's illegal to publish them, which is a real shame, but pretty much everywhere else in the world is covered. So day number 10, our website and online resource is liveatc.net.
Morning, New York. Side station 123, Alpha Delta checking in, flight level 270. Great day.
Okay, moving on to day number 9. And this is our favourite book of the year. I'm coming back to you again, Amy.
Yeah, this book is one of my top want to reads because I've not actually read it yet. But yeah, after looking at all the contents and stuff, it does look like it's most possibly the most detailed Vulcan book I have ever come across. It includes a little introduction, a little bit about AV Rho, the first, which is VX770, the last, which is obviously XH558, and it goes through the prototypes and all the different serials, which is through XA to XM, and there's Squadron Insignia and more, and that's pretty much it.
This is quite a special book that we've got, though, the 60th anniversary of the Vulcan. Why is that, Amy?
We've managed to get a signed copy from all three authors, and Martin Withers and Robert Fleming. So it's quite a special book.
Amy, for those who don't know who those two gentlemen are, can you just tell us?
Martin Withers is the guy who flew XM607 over Port Stanley during the Falklands, and Robert Fleming is the chief executive of Vulcan to the Sky Trust.
So, we also have a copy of this book for you, and again, following the...
collector's edition.
Yes, it really is. This really is a special opportunity to have something that will go down in history. So, email, so Day 9 and Vulcan in the title with your name and address. You need to like them on Facebook and you need to follow them on Twitter. So, let's move on to day number 8. And day number 8 is for the younger Av Geek. And we have chosen Jim the Jet Provost. Now, Jim the Jet Provost is a book written by Amanda Cundall with drawings by Spencer Trickett. It's a great little book and written well for both the younger as well as the older reader. However, the book really does come to life with the artwork by Spencer Trickett. It really is quite special. And given that a lot of the work that went into this book was well before the latest iteration of Disney programs and planes that we've seen this year, I think it's well worth a visit to their site to see how they're doing. So a little bit about the book. It's about a jet provost. Listen to Amanda telling you a bit about the story.
Jim the Jet Provost by Amanda Cundall. Jim was an old Royal Air Force jet provost aeroplane. He was lonely, and he was very, very sad. You see, Jim had been left in an old aircraft hangar for what felt to him like an awfully long time. The only daylight he saw these days was from a shaft of light that beamed down through a hole in the hangar roof and fell straight down onto his canopy. Once, many moons ago, somebody had passed by the outside of the hangar, and with great curiosity they had scraped away the dirt from a window on one of the hangar doors, so they could look into the gloomy darkness of the creaky old airfield building. For a while after that, Jim had been able to watch the seasons come and go through the window because of the smear that had been left behind in the glass. Sadly, though, this smear had long since gone, and all that was left now was a mucky smudge. It was because he'd been abandoned in this cold, spooky, damp old hangar, with only the occasional bird, a family of mice, and some creepy old spiders for company, that Jim was so unbelievably sad. In fact, Jim had never, ever been so unhappy as he was now. In Jim's happier days, he'd spent all his time outside, flying around with his friends in all kinds of weather, racing through the clouds at such speeds he could barely catch his breath sometimes. For a while, he'd been part of a display team called the Fenton Flyers, which had attracted crowds from all over the world. They loved to watch Jim and his team roam in the skies with their clever manoeuvres and aerobatics. He could almost still hear the oohs and the ahs and the thunderous applause from the delighted crowds. Those had been the best days of his life. But it really was such a long time ago. He yearned to return to those glorious days. Now, of course, here he stood, sad and all alone in a dusty corner of the hangar. His wings were drooping and rusting away. His canopy was cracked. He was covered in dust, and cobwebs clogged up his engine. All he could do was dream of those happy days which had all passed by. He was a very sorry, sad sight indeed. Early one morning, Jim was woken by the sound of a vehicle outside the hangar. At first he thought he'd imagined the sound, but then he heard footsteps approaching. He pricked up his air intakes to listen. Suddenly, the old rusty hangar doors began to screech open. The doors hadn't been open for many years, and as they slowly parted, bright daylight flooded into the dusty building, and Jim felt the warmth of the sun against his dirty old fuselage. A soft breeze blew through the hangar and gently shook a spider in its web. Am I still dreaming? Jim thought. The doors were almost fully opened. He squinted against the strong sunlight and saw the silhouette of two figures walking towards him. As they approached and Jim's eyes began to adjust to the bright daylight, he could see that they were men wearing overalls. Both men carried what appeared to be buckets of water, some sponges, some brushes, and a heavy-looking metal box which they carried between them. One of the men was very tall and thin, and he seemed to struggle with the heavy box, even though his companion was helping him to carry it. The other man was short and quite chubby. He had a slight wobble as he walked. Still quite a distance away, the tall man stopped and looked at Jim. He was smiling. He seemed to say something to the chubby man as he pointed to Jim, and the small chubby man nodded his head, and then they began to walk towards him again. Jim was intrigued. Who were these men, and what were they doing in his hangar?
Now, the book isn't published yet, and we want to get it published, and we need your help. But because we need your help, we're willing to put in a little prize to keep you motivated. So there'll be some Jim the Jet Provost goodies, and remember those excellent pictures by Spencer. Some giveaway merchandise is on offer, but you need to do a little bit more work than some of the other offers for this one. You need to go to autonomy.com, which is a publisher's page, and you need to back the book, rate it, and more importantly, review it for us. If you start your review with extended and then write your review, we will enter you into the competition. But you do need to like Jim the Jet Provost on Facebook, and you do need to follow them on Twitter as well. Send us that email. And this is day number 8, Jim the Jet Provost. Same format, enter your name and address in the mail as well. That's x10d@mail.com. Now, a few things just to be aware of. You can't do it from an iPad or an iPhone, apparently. It has to be from a PC because you need Flash Player for this site. Only one registration per computer to stop any multiple account entries. Now, just a little bit more about the work that Amanda and Spencer are doing. This isn't all about fun and profit. All of the funds and income coming from the books is going to military charities. So a really, really important cause that they're looking to support. Amanda did tell me that she was hoping to get the book published by Easter time, so fingers crossed, but it does depend on people going to the Autonomy site and backing the book and rating it. And just to let you know, if you do like what you've heard on Jim the Jet Provost, there are two other books coming your way, and that's Larry the Lightning and Fat Albert as well. Again,
yes, some,
yes, I know, some absolutely great merchandise that Amanda has on the website, which you can buy straight away. But if you want a chance to win it, you need to go and back the book, you need to rate it and review it, and of course follow all the other instructions too. So that was day number 8, and that was the Younger Average Geek product, Jim the Jet Provost. So Gareth, day number 7 and 6.
Yeah, so the 6th and 7th days of Christmas, couple of piloty items, and who better to ask to choose those than our extended good friend John Duke from Get Into Flying. So that's exactly what I did. John Duke, Get Into Flying, welcome back to Extended. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I know you've been a busy boy, and Get Into Flying's taking up a lot of time. Everything seems to be going great guns. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I have been busy in a good way, both with work with the Navy and also with getting to fly. We've got a couple more team members on board helping me out now, Jake Price and Jack Newman, and they are sort of taking the lead with the website side of things. We've also got several other team pilots that have come on board to give their input and their content from around aviation. So yeah, we're growing and things are going well.
And more of the same for 2014. Is that the plan, or anything specific you can tell us, or is it just to sort of watch this space?
Yeah, definitely. We're certainly looking at doing some more competitions in 2014. We've had a bit of success with our 2013 sort of competition season. We've obviously already put someone in an aerobatic aircraft as a prize. We'd be looking to go further than that next year. And 2014 is going to be our main sort of push is going to be video and getting video out there, sorting our YouTube channel out, and just creating more content.
Excellent. Well, you know that you can continue to rely on support from Extended. We think you're doing a great job, and we look forward to seeing what you come up with next year.
Thanks very much.
So, from a pilot's perspective, onto the Extended 12 Days of Christmas.
Yeah.
And you've got to know where you are and what day it is. So our sixth day of Christmas is something that's pretty important for a pilot, and it's a good watch, John. What have you selected?
So for the sixth day of Christmas, for keeping time and for delivering a little bit of the style of aviation when you perhaps can't actually be in an aircraft because of the weather or for any other reason, I've nominated the Bremont Martin Baker 2 watch. Now, it's one of a pair, as the number indicates. The Martin Baker 1 isn't available unless you've had to eject out of an aircraft, so not... not available for the majority of us, but the Martin Baker 2 is a very similar watch, similar in all but a couple of details, and it obviously has the date on there so that you know which day of Christmas it is. But it's also a very, very stylish, very handsome watch, perhaps more suited to male pilots rather than female pilots. And of course, you don't have to be a pilot to own one. Anybody with an aviation interest might choose to support Bremont by buying one of these watches. The reason I've chosen that is, firstly, it's an incredibly good looking watch. And Bremont are a British company, but not only British, they are very, very keen supporters of aviation. Both the brothers that own the company are pilots themselves. And the company has a rich history of supporting both military and civilian aviation organisations. They have a particularly good relationship with the Royal Navy Historic Flight, which is where my interest in them comes from. So my recommendation for the sixth day of Christmas is the Bremont Martin Baker 2 watch. And that's available direct from Bremont through their website or through any of their boutiques.
Okay, so we know what time it is. We're looking good in the flying club or at the air show. One of the big things now, though, John, it's sharing flying and doing this through film and through video, whether it's YouTube, social media, and it's brilliant. Those of us who don't fly regularly, we can go online now and put ourselves almost in any cockpit due to the tiny sort of camera equipment and such like that's available now.
Yeah.
And our seventh day of Christmas. Is another brand that you've picked, and this is really a developing brand, possibly one that some of our listeners won't have heard of.
Yeah, so for the seventh day of Christmas, I've opted to go with an action camera, and it's not the most well-known action camera out there. I think probably most familiar among motorcyclists at the moment, but I think this camera has a really good place in the cockpit. I think it's fantastically well-designed, maybe by accident. I think probably by accident rather than by sheer design, but it so happens that it is almost perfectly suited for filming in the cockpit. The camera is by Drift Innovation, and it's one of two. You could either go with the Ghost HD or the Drift Ghost S, the S being the more up-to-date version with a few more features on it. And there are three main reasons that I think this camera is suited to aviation. First of all, ease of use. Obviously, if you're in a cockpit, you're already operating a complicated piece of machinery. So you don't want to add more complication into that environment by having a complex camera that, you know, you're going to have to decode the menus. And that's just a big button, hit record, and the thing's going, and you know that it's going. The second feature of the camera that makes it particularly suited to cockpits is the fact that it's very easy to place. It comes with all the mounting options that you need. You don't need extra backs, extra cases, extra anything. You just stick it where you can in the cockpit. And then it has a rotating front element. So you just spin that around to line it up with the horizon, and that's your camera in position. And the third feature is just its quality in terms of the image. Now, it's not the highest quality image that you're going to get out of an action camera, but unless you're working on a dedicated video workstation and you've got the computing horsepower to use, you know, these really high bitrate images, you really don't need that kind of horsepower in your camera. And in fact, you're better off without it. You're better off with a camera that's doing some of the work for you, so that the work that you're doing on the computer is a minimum. Ideally, you're just going to upload it to your computer and get it onto YouTube as quickly as possible. And hopefully, these kinds of cameras are going to make it much easier for people who are involved in flying and in aviation to share some of that magic that all pilots feel when they fly, to get that feeling of freedom and whatever it is, whatever reason it is that you fly. These cameras are going to make it much easier to share that with people who maybe either don't have that experience, or who aren't able to go flying, you know, for whatever reason. Hopefully, it'll inspire more people to take up aviation, or to at least have an interest in it.
And in terms of video, John, that, you know, as well as all that sort of inspiration, and, you know, let's all go and sit in a F-18 as it does a lap round a carrier and such like, you're actually going to use. Increasingly going to use video for sort of educational purposes, if that's the right phrase, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've got a video series in the works at the moment that is going to really, the aim of it is to take somebody who's never flown before, who has no concept of what flying for leisure might be like, and to take them through and really give them a bit of a guided tour of private flying. So we can show them, what the typical training aircraft is like, what their first flight might be like, where to go to find information about where they can go fly, what sort of different aircraft are available, and hopefully answer all the questions that somebody might have and allay some of the fears maybe that they have around taking up flying. Because it's not a sport or a hobby that is very easy and very accessible to get into. It kind of has a cliqueiness, but flying, there is a community that exists within flying, and coming in as an outsider, you know, it may make the less confident people a little bit nervous. So we're going to try and dispel some of that, get rid of some of the myth and the mystery, and really present flying as it should be, which is just as the pure excitement and feeling of, enjoyment and achievement that that you can get out of it.
John, thank you so much for contributing to our extended 12 Days of Christmas. I know that on behalf of the team, we'd like to offer you and your colleagues, both at work and getting to flying, have a good Christmas and all the best for 2014. And thanks for supporting us.
Well, thanks very much for your support, and Merry Christmas to the team at Extended and all your listeners. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Okay, down to day five then. And day five is our favourite local airfield. And our favourite local airfield probably won't be a surprise to some of you, but is a little gem of an airfield called Compton Abbas. It's well known as being one of the friendliest and most picturesque airfields, not in the UK, but actually around the world. And there's lots of great things that go on Comptus. Got a grass strip. It's situated about 800 feet above sea level, and it has spectacular views across an area of outstanding natural beauty in England, down in Dorset. It's just the other side of Shaftesbury towards Blandford. The airfield has a restaurant and a fully licensed bar, and is open 360 days of the year. Now, I visited Compton many a time. I've used the restaurant. I've got to say, the thing that really does stand out is how welcome you're made to feel. I often go down with my three-year-old daughter, who loves to watch the planes and the helicopters and the microlights taking off and landing, and I'm as important to them as any of the pilots or visitors there. The airfield is run by the Hughes family. Clive Hughes decided one day to leave the comforts of Heathrow with his wife Margaret and bought the airfield in Dorset. His two daughters, that's Emma and Laura, run things down there, and they do a fabulous job. Now, a few things going on worth mentioning. Compton in 2012 raised £6,000 for a charity with a calendar. Next year, 2014, they have a new calendar that they are aiming to raise £10,000 for military charity supporting those injured in service. So that, if nothing else, is well worth a visit to their website, if not a visit to the airfield itself. Fantastic restaurant. I'm told, and I have sampled these, but I'm told by Twitter from around the world that they do have the best cakes in the world. Food's fantastic. They really do. They really do have a great atmosphere there. It's great food. It's not overly expensive. You could quite easily spend a day at the airfield. They have a great shop there, which has something for everyone. Now, we're planning to bring you a couple of segments from Compton Abbas next year to cover some general aviation activities, possibly the ladies pilot flying and one of the aerobatic competitions. So that's Compton Abbas. Do go and have a look. Do pop down if you can to see them. Laura and Emma will make you feel very, very welcome. And of course, if you can get the opportunity to buy that calendar, please do. So that is number 5, our favourite local airfield. That's Compton Abbas.
Hello, this is Neil Braden from getmyppl.blogspot.com. Wishing all the listeners at Extended a happy Christmas and a wonderful new year. Blue skies and tailwinds.
Okay, over to day 4 then. And day 4 is our favourite T-shirt. And we've come across a great organisation called Basic Six. And Basic Six have got some wonderful T-shirts for the aviation enthusiast. The flagship design, the Basic Six instruments, was inspired by the standardization of cockpit instrument layout set by the Royal Air Force in the 30s. Apparently, this enabled pilots to convert more safely and quickly to different types of aircraft. So, great T-shirts, ethically made, organic cotton, made in the UK, shipped to anywhere in the world. And we have a T-shirt to give away to a listener. So not only do we like them, we've got one for you. So if you want that T-shirt, you need to follow Basic Six on Twitter. You need to like them on Facebook. Then send us an email to x10d@mail.com with Day 4, Basic Six in the title and your name and address.
Can I just say, Peter, I love their Danger Ejection Seat Triangle T-shirts.
Yes, yeah, and I do.
And they're also, they've got a great T-shirt there with very kind of interesting symbol there of like a red dart going for a hexagon. It's actually a symbol that was seen on the nose of a Russian aircraft Soviet aircraft during the Cold War of either the crew or the maintenance team had achieved a high standard. You know, if you're an av geek and you're up on your Cold War Russian aircraft and you see someone in this T-shirt, you'll know they're a true av geek.
Yeah, they're absolutely gorgeous T-shirts. Now, there's lots of ways of getting them. You could be lucky enough to win one, of course. But if that's not enough and you want to get one before Christmas or even after Christmas, go to Basic6, go online, use the promo code EXTENDED, and you will get a 10% discount on every T-shirt. So you don't have to wait to win the prize. You can go straight out and buy that T-shirt from Basic6. We'd prefer if you bought it directly from the website, but if you choose to do your shopping through Amazon, don't forget to go through our link on our website, because I know that you can buy the Basic6 T-shirts at Amazon as well. So go and support them. Fantastic T-shirts. We really, really think they're great. As I say, ethically made, organic cotton, very, very high quality. And they will be supporting the show moving forwards. Okay, so that's our favourite T-shirt. Now, our favourite family day out. Amy, I'm coming back to you for day three.
Yeah, my favourite family day out is at Air Adventure. It's a small aircraft museum in Doncaster, South Yorkshire. It is really quite small and hidden, but I definitely recommend going there if you're already in that sort of area. Or maybe what most people do, I find, is that they go to see XH558 at Doncaster Airport, and then they go to the museum as well. I really do think it's a great little museum. I always call it my little hidden treasure museum, because every time I go, I seem to find something new that I've not seen before. So that's always
nice. And what's your favourite aircraft or item there, Amy?
Probably their Lightning. It's pretty beat up, but every time I go, I can't not go and be like, oh, the Lightning's there. I do enjoy going there.
Now, we do have a family ticket to give away as well, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
So what you need to do is follow AeroVenture and like them on Facebook. That is day number three. So in your email to x10d@mail.com, it's day number three, AeroVenture for the title, and your name and address in the email. Good luck.
Hi, I'm Francis Peters from the Aviation Platform. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas from the rest of our team, and be inspired about aviation in 2014.
Okay, down to day number two, and this was our gaming and software best choice. Tim, I think you had the opportunity to do a little bit of searching and find our favourite product.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow my Twitter stream, you'll know I'm a big simulator, flight simulator fan, anything to do with aircraft. The more buttons or manuals to read, the better. Been playing with a great little sort of ATC tower simulator called Airport Madness 4 from bigfatsimulations.com. Really simple, looks very, very kind of, when you kind of you look at it, you think, oh, this is a bit of a kid's game. But I can tell you the difficulty level kind of ramps up very, very quickly indeed. And all of a sudden you're managing little aircraft coming in and trying to kind of land them on the right runway, trying to get other aircraft to go round, it's got a kind of cartoon kind of sort of layout, and it looks a bit sort of simplistic, but you stick the higher difficulty levels on, and you are going to kind of, your brain is still going to start to melt. It's also got another one, which is Airport Madness Time Machine, and this is in some ways even more fun. Stuff from about 1925, just a grass strip with things like Curtis Jennys landing on there. And then the airport, over time, develops. So it goes to the whole, Lindbergh takes off from your airfield. And then, obviously, you've got the kind of DC-3s and then the jet age. And you can see how a whole sort of modern airport kind of develops from the sort of small beginnings. Great fun. It's not a hardcore simulation by any means, but it's one of those things where it's just so addictive just one more try and do this that it'll keep coming back. If you want to find them, they're on www.bigfatsimulations.com, or you can go back to their Facebook page and like them there at Big Fat Sims, and they're on Twitter as well as Big Fat Sims as well.
And Tim, we've got a copy to give away to a
listener. Do. Well. So so if you want to win a copy of Airport Madness 4, you want to send an email. Go to their Facebook page, like them there, follow them on Twitter, and send us an email with a day two and your name and address to be put in the pot to win a copy of it.
Excellent stuff. And going forward, if you like what you see with Big Fat Simulations, they are going to give our listeners a whopping 50% discount moving forward. So if you use the promo code EXTENDED to buy that product, you will get a massive discount. So we're very, very grateful to Big Fat Simulations for that. Great software, and that is day two, gaming software. So that brings us to day number one, and this is our favorite aerospace product of the year, and it is, and it's no surprise, but it is Roland White's The Big Book of Flight. We've waxed lyrical plenty of times over this book. It's not overly expensive. It's absolutely jam-packed with great stories, but also with a hell of a lot of detail and some wonderful research that Roland's done into the sector to bring an all-round summary of flight from the very early days up until recent times. You've heard Roland on the show a few times, and I'm sure if you like his style, you will love this book. So if you want to buy the book, of course, you can get it at Amazon. Please go through the link on our page. But if you want to win a signed copy of Roland's book, this is a very special prize signed by Roland White author. You will have to like all of the Facebook pages and follow all of the Twitter streams for the 12 days of Christmas, and then send us an email with number one, The Big Book of Flight, to extendee@mail.com with your name and address to be in with a chance of winning that wonderful prize. So they are our 12 days. I'll just go back and summarize them for you. We had the Fear of Flying book by Doug Worrell for day 12. We had Lusty Lindy, day 11, as our restoration product. We had liveatc.net, day 10, as our favorite online resource. Day 9 was the 60th anniversary of the Vulcan, of course, signed by the three authors as well. Day 8 for the younger AvGeek was Jim the Jet Provost. Then we had 7 and 6, which were the watch and the pilot product. Day 5 was our favourite local airfield, that's Compton Abbas, of course. Day 4 was the Basic 6 t-shirts. Day 3, a family day out at AeroVenture. Day 2 was Big Fat Simulations. And, of course, number one is The Big Book of Flight by Roland White. So we hope you enjoyed that little segment, a little bit different. We thought we'd bring you a bit of festive cheer. We would like to thank all of those organizations who we contacted to see if they were comfortable with us using them. And, of course, you've seen the offers that we got back as replies. So we're very, very grateful to all of those organizations for supporting Extended.
Game challenge begins. Launch. Circular orbit. Rapid rendezvous. Intercept and dock with International Space Station.
All engine running. Liftoff. Tower clear.
Push the ISS to higher orbit. Rescue EVA astronauts. Avoid space debris. Destroy debris with missiles. Protect the ISS for as long as possible. Deorbit. Land. Survive.
All in a day's work.
We had a pretty large bank. We've had a problem here.
Post control, both autos, these engine command override off.
We've had shutdown.
Leo. Low Earth Orbit. A game from skyrocketcafe.com.
Things you never knew about.
So in our Things You Never Knew About segment, in this episode, we thought we'd bring you some facts about our beloved Spitfire. And this comes from the website militaryhistory.org. And some interesting little mentions I thought worth reading out. The Spitfire was the only plane to be continuously under construction throughout the Second World War. I didn't know that, I've got to say. Much to the delight of the grounded pilots, some of the Spitfires had modified underwing mountings, which instead of carrying bombs when they were ferrying the aircraft, they used them to house two small beer barrels. So, novel use of the aircraft there. The Spitfire's maiden flight was on the 5th of March 1936. It entered service with the RAF in 1938 and remained there until 1955. During this time, 20,351 Spitfires were built. I was absolutely amazed at that. I didn't realise that so many had been built. More importantly, that it had remained in RAF service until 1955.
Incredible. They were still using, they used a Spitfire, I think, in the 60s for a test. They did a sort of a dissimilar air combat with a English Electric Lightning because the Indonesian confrontation was on there. So this would be about early 60s, maybe 1965.
Right,
Indonesian
okay.
confrontation was going on, and the Indonesians had Mustangs. So somebody sort of said, well, who wins in a Lightning v Mustang, English Electric Lightning v Mustang, you know, air combat? And so they brought a Spit in to have a fight with a Lightning.
Wow, unbelievable. But that's not all we've got. Following on from our last episode, which of course was a space-focused episode, all I heard as the episode went to air was how many rocket launches there'd been. And I just went back and had a little look. In November, which of course we recorded that episode in, there were 14 rocket launches, including, of course, the Maven mission, as well as India's Mom mission to Mars. And also in November, 75 satellites or pieces of kit were shot into space just in 1 month. So far in December this month, we've seen 3 rocket launches. There's another 10 more, so there'll be 13. Of course, the Chang'e 3 has launched to the moon with the rover, and in December another 30 satellites will be launched. So quite amazing that 105 satellites in the last 2 months have been launched into space. 74 rocket launches so far for 2013. So I just thought they were some interesting stats. Absolutely amazed. So again, anyone who says there's not really much going on in the space sector, well, those numbers hopefully will change that opinion. And there you go. Things you never knew about.
Things you never knew about. Canadian
808, turn right, heading 090.
That's 090, Canadian 808.
Canadian 808, Schiphol.
Go ahead, 808.
Do you have an estimate on the time you have to sort things out?
Ashibus Canadian 828, we need to return. We have no cabin pressure at all, so we need to evacuate back to runway 27 at Schiphol.
Canadian 828, reduced to 220 knots, expect ILS 27. You are now on the right and downwind.
Thank you about that. For that, expect runway 27 and speed 220, Canada 828. Now we are at level 80 now.
Canadian 828, you have about 2.4 track miles. Is that enough, or do you need more miles to prepare?
It's fine, we need that's fine, we can do it right now.
Scandinavian 828, descend to my level 70 and contact arrival for your line, 118.4.
You roger that. Flight to the 70 and the 1194. It's going to have an 828.
118 decimal 4, sir. Bye bye.
118 decimal 4. It's going to have an 828. Bye bye.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
And so, to the get involved and feedback section of the show, let's start with emails. We got an email from Ian Moore, and the subject was the F-35. And Ian writes, "Love the show, guys. Came across you via a Twitter link. I listen to you while I'm driving," and he's just about caught up on all the back episodes. "Great interview with Eric Brown. Could quite happily listen to a whole show with him if you could arrange it." Unfortunately, we can't, but what an amazing man. He goes on to say, "My puzzle is regarding the F-35 and the name Lightning II. As I see it, shouldn't it be Lightning III? The British named the P-38 Lightning. Then we had the English Electric Lightning, and now the F-35. I'd be happy if it was just Lightning, as they did with Typhoon. There's no need, really, for the numbering. How does the MOD choose names? To an outside view, it appears that the Navy likes birds and the RAF weather patterns, or is that too simplistic? Anyway, keep up the good work. Regards, Ian."
Well, that's interesting. Lightning, it's probably, I mean, the reason they went for the Lightning with the F-35, Lightning II, obviously it refers to the Lockheed Lightning, and, you know, the UK is a level one partner, so they paid tribute to the English Electric Lightning and, you know, got a name there that everybody's happy with. However, interesting fact was that the F-22 was originally called the Lightning II. It was originally called the Lightning II until about when Jurassic Park was released, when somebody actually saw, must have sort of seen, you know, Jurassic Park and thought, "Oh, Raptor, there's a cool name," and it got renamed. So
I didn't know
that. We're actually on Lightning IV, if you want to be really pedantic about it.
So what about the next bit of the question? How does the MOD choose names? The Navy likes birds and the RAF weather patterns. I quite like that statement, but seriously.
I think what there is now is people are trying to pick and reuse older names. You know, they're trying to pick heritage names that have got good. You know, obviously no one's going to touch Spitfire, but, you know, Typhoon caused a little bit of problems with the German partners, because they were on the receiving end of the RAF Hawker Typhoon, but they seem to have accepted now.
Sorry.
You've got things now like the King Air in Royal Navy service is called the Avenger.
Yeah, that is a bit. No,
it's sure. a little bit of a wary name for a
King Air.
For a King Air, yeah. I mean, if it was me, I would have gone for the F-35. I would have kept the kind of maybe the weather idea. Maybe, you know, Cyclone.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it makes it too much like seem like a Dyson.
I was going to say it's a Hoover. It's definitely a Hoover.
Or a vacuum cleaner to our American friends.
But yeah, I think there's a trend now of looking back and going, well, you know, what can we, you know, are there any unused or little known names we can reuse and, you know, I don't know, sort of celebrate past types, I suppose.
Oh well, let's move on. Let's move on to Twitter. It's been a busy time. We had pilot_NGB. He wrote to us. He loved episode 20, the space themed episode. Great interviews. It brought back fond memories of his visit to Endeavour, and he sent us a copy of a photo. So thanks very much for that, Neil. Mike Sharp sent us or included us in a tweet, which was Google Maps view of the Biggin Hill, and it showed the red arrows on the runway during an air show, which I thought was quite interesting. So we had a little look at that. That was pretty cool.
That's a brilliant picture, Peter. And if anyone hasn't seen it before, they're not all on the runway.
I didn't notice that.
See if you can spot the, crikey, from memory, one, maybe two that aren't.
Okay. All right. If I remember, I'll put that in the show notes, the link to that photo. Then we had NIR 890, who was copying in a reply to the NAT display team. I think they were looking for people to learn how to fly the NAT, and he copied us in and said, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I'd absolutely love to do something like that," but he doesn't have the time, unfortunately. Now, if I remember rightly, he is a 737 pilot out of Birmingham. That's a real shame. The Air League, the Leading Edge, is loving the new Aviation Extended podcast. Astronaut Mike Mullane is such a captivating guy. So thank you very much for that. We had our very own Grant, Falcon124, who made the comment, "Soyuz may appear pre-industrial, but it's outlasted the shuttle and taken lots more humans into space.
Good point.
Yeah. Hashtag some days it just works." So thank you very much for that. Our very own Max Flight was on the Stuck Mike Avcast and gave us a shout out. So thank you very much for that, Max. Tim noticed on Twitter that the UK CAA team won the Aero Quiz 13.
They did. They were very, very impressive.
Were they? Does that mean that they absolutely wiped the floor with everyone?
Well, they were there, and there have to be a crack. Let's put it this way: there have to be a crack team of Avgeeks put together next year to attempt to wrest the trophy off them.
Ooh, yeah, that's a challenge. Maybe that extended team will get out there at some time. And then finally on Twitter, one that I picked up at Planes of the Past, who posted a picture of a Vulcan bomber at Barksdale in Louisiana, which I thought was very interesting. Certainly one for Amy. I know you like your V-bombers. It was really interesting to see a picture of a Vulcan in the States. So thank you for posting that. Okay, over to Facebook. Steve Riley, just listened to the latest episode. As usual, excellent, top-class content. Thank you very much. Now, we posted a video of a Model C-17 on Facebook. I don't know if anyone got to see this, but it is awesome. It's gigantic, and it's up on our Facebook page. We did have some feedback. Neil Braden liked how they backtracked it down the runway. Joe Chung said the world's largest remote control toy has to be a UAV flown by USAF RAF pilots. I'm just shocked at the size of some of these remote control aircraft. I mean, they are almost UAVs, some of these things.
Enormous.
Yeah. One photo that proved very, very popular is our new timeline shot of the shuttle, Gareth, so thank you very much for doing that. I do think it's an absolutely awesome photo.
So it's an absolute cracker, isn't it?
Yeah. So we got a lot of likes for that, and also proving popular was a picture we shared from Compton Abbas, and that was of a Hornet Moth, which I haven't seen before, but is now there as a resident. So I think you can hire that. And one thing I didn't mention, if you want a quick Christmas present before Christmas and want to buy something online, they have some fabulous deals at Compton Abbas for introductory and pleasure flights, some as low as £69. So well worth a visit there. Okay, continuing on Facebook, Dave Homewood from the Wings Over New Zealand forum He wrote that he always listens to the show and really enjoyed the last episode on space, even though it was not normally his topic of interest. Now, Dave runs a podcast that's worth a listen, particularly having covered some warbird stories and GA in New Zealand. So if that's what you like, it's well worth a listen.
For 535 Delta Lima, direct Columbia, Charlie Alpha Echo.
I appreciate that. Direct Columbia for 535 Delta Lima.
You got me in a good mood.
Thank you, sir. We'll take that any day of the week.
So will my wife.
You talk with mine.
Okay, promoting aerospace, promoting your websites and blogs. The Wartime Heritage Association is a volunteer non-profit organization dedicated to remembering the wartime heritage and history of Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, which of course is in Canada, as well as other Commonwealth nations and allied countries during World War One, World War Two, and other conflicts. Some of you may know my father's story. Well, these guys, and in particular Glenn and George, have done a fabulous job of looking at the telegraphist air gunners from the Fleet Air Arm in the Second World War who trained at Yarmouth. So thanks again, Glenn and George. They are featuring Extended on their front page, so please go and have a look at their work. If you want your aerospace or aviation website or internet resource given a mention, just email us and we'll send you a copy of our logo for your site. And then we'll give you a mention in this spot. It's free advertising for us all. Okay, Amy.
Hello again.
Hi, you're still with us then.
I am.
Amy, before we look at your challenge for this episode, tell us a little bit about your interest in aviation, because you're quite active. For those who follow you on Twitter and Facebook, you've often got an opinion on aviation somewhere. You don't hold back. Where did your interest start?
It's quite a difficult one. I'm not entirely sure it started, but I think I got it from my dad. My dad's got a really big interest in the Vulcan, and you know, when she started coming back into flight and stuff, my dad was like, we need to go see this plane fly. And then I didn't really know much about it back then. I think I was about 13 or 14 years old, and we went to pretty much every air show in our area just to see the Vulcan fly. And it took a couple of years, but I think that's sort of where my interest started.
You're now an avid photographer. I know you visit some of the museums and airfields in your area as well, and you've also got a blog.
I have, yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your blog?
I started writing that because I've always been interested in writing, and I did intend for it to just be aviation only, but me being me, it ended up being pretty much all sorts. But most of the stuff on there is aviation, and I started that I started that because I just enjoy writing, so.
Right, okay, and we can see some of your photos on there as well.
Yeah, I try and do a photo of the day every single day, but I usually forget.
Now, you've also got a very strong interest in a certain F-16 demo team as well.
I have.
How did that all happen?
I'm not really sure. I'm not going to get too much into it, but I've had quite a rough 2 years. And last year I was at Waddington International Air Show, and I've always liked the F-16 demo team from the Royal Netherlands Air Force. But I don't know where, I don't know how or why, but the way that Stitch just flew that F-16 last year, something just clicked in my mind and I just fell in love with them again. It was a lot different to high-tech display, so yeah, I love that team.
Very, very impressive, very impressive display, and of course the aircraft still looks stunning, even though say it's a little bit dated. That's not all that you do, is it? You also do a little bit of work on the hangar.
I do, yes.
Can you tell us a bit about the hangar for anyone who doesn't know what the hangar is?
Yeah. The Hangar is Global Aviation Resources' social media website. I'm an admin on there, and I do a bit of writing and stuff. But yeah, it's sort of like Facebook for AvGeeks. We want to try and get more people using it and writing on there regularly and stuff. But yeah, we need a little bit more support with that, I think.
Right, okay. So if you're interested, do go and have a look at that. We'll put a link in the show notes to the hangar. Now, Amy, you have been known to set the odd challenge or two. And we have been, yes, we have been using the hashtag Amy's Challenge on Twitter, but it seems to have been stolen or snatched from us. So
it has.
Unbelievable.
I know, I know. So we're going to have to look for something else. So what have you chosen?
I've chosen Pod's Challenge because I think most people on Twitter know me as Pod now. So
okay, I'm sure there's a story behind that we'll probably leave for another day.
Yeah.
But, so Amy, what's the challenge you've got for us this episode?
Okay, it's a surprise one for you, because even you don't know it, Peter.
Oh.
I hope it's a good one. I've chosen, if you were to have your own aircraft museum, what would be the first three aircraft you would put in your museum?
Okay. Who's going first?
Head scratching time. So this is money, no object.
Yeah, you can have whatever.
Are we allowed to choose things that never flew?
Yeah,
or,
whatever you want.
Absolutely
anything.
Right. A blackbird. I'd have an SR-71.
Oh, that's a good choice.
After one of those. This is a difficult one.
Yeah, this is hard. I can think of two. I mean, the first one's a bit cheesy, and that is a Concorde. I'd love to have a Concorde. But for me, I would have a fairy barracuda, because there's no complete fairy barracudas yet, although there is a project to restore one that's underway that can be tracked through the Fleet Air Arm Museum. But yes, I'd love to have a fairy barracuda. I can think of just too many others that I'd like. I think I'd like an F4 Phantom. I do love the Phantom. And I suppose that would be me. I'd like to go on, but that's me. Very quiet, Mr. Stringer.
Am I allowed to see two of my initial thoughts have already been picked? So I'm trying to keep it different. So as a real icon and as an aircraft I've read a lot about and have always been fascinated by, I would pick a U-2.
Oh yeah.
As my first choice. I would pick a Victor as my second choice.
That's
because
mine as well.
That's the aircraft my dad worked on when he was in the Air Force, so I'd definitely pick a Victor. And then I was gonna say F4, but I'm gonna say something different as Peter, as you pick that. And I am going to say, drum roll, MiG-25.
Ooh. Because they just go out of service, yeah.
I was just talking about them the other day, actually. Interesting.
All right, I've got my other two. I've got, I would have a Horten 229, which is the German flying wing, kind of prototype. Aircraft from 1945. You see that shape in the skies all the time now. Every single UAV looks exactly the same like it. And that was the first time. It's one of the Smithsonian, I think. And I'd finish off. I have to have a Spitfire. And I don't know. Maybe a Mark.
No, that's Mark 3, isn't it? Oh yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Mark 5B. Yeah, Mark 5B.
5B. Okay. So that's Concorde, Barracuda, Phantom, SR-71, Horten 229, Spitfire, U-2, Victor. And what was your third one, Gareth?
MiG-25.
Oh, yeah, MiG-25. Interesting.
Not a bad museum, is it?
Yeah, it's a rather eclectic 9 aircraft, I must say. So, Amy, seeing as we've got you,
yeah,
what would your three be?
My first one would be an English Electric Lightning.
Oh, I did think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of mine was a Victor, but Gareth chose it. So if I had to change that, I'd probably have a P40. And my third one would be an F-14 Tomcat.
Yes.
Not a bad mix of aircraft there. So if you want to rise to Pods Challenge, hashtag Pods Challenge on Twitter, and tell us the three aircraft you'd love to see in your museum. So, Amy, thank you very much for that. Amy, where can we find you online?
On Twitter, you can find me at _AmyParkin, and on my blog, you can find me at www.littleruduk.blogspot.co.uk.
Right, thank you very much, Amy. Then finally, before we go, Tim, do you have an aerospace project you want to promote?
I haven't got one as such, but what I'd like to do instead is, this is our final podcast of the year, so I'd like to say a big thank you for all our listeners, all who keep us going, who send us comments and give us feedback. We couldn't do this without you, and you're a great sort of inspiration to keep on podcasting.
Yep, great shout.
So thank you all, and a Merry Christmas.
Gareth, how about you? It's a difficult one to follow, really.
Yeah, it's funny, Peter, because Tim and I genuinely hadn't discussed this beforehand, but I've been sat here through the show tonight thinking about a shout out, and actually I thought, oh no, Tim's going to do exactly what I'm about to do, but he hasn't exactly, because what I thought I would do for mine, I guess a little bit like Tim on behalf of the team, you know, I'm looking through the episodes that we've recorded this year on our website, you know, Mike Mullane, Roland White, Gene McCulker, we've talked Blackhawk, Osprey, you know, Cape Town to Goodwood, we've had Max has been on, we've talked to Jamie Norris about the Typhoon. So for me, a huge thank you to all of the people who have given their time and helped make each episode what it is, because we've talked about some brilliant subjects and talked to some brilliant people, and they've all been absolutely fantastic. And so thank you so much. I hope we can bring you more of the same in 2014. And as Tim said, you know, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah, that's another great shout. Thank you very much for that, Gareth. Yeah, we got some great ideas for 2014 that are bubbling under at the moment. So hopefully some of those will come off. If you've got a great story or know of somebody who you think would be interesting for us to talk to, please do let us know. But as we run up to Christmas, and if you still have a little bit of shopping to do and you might just want to be doing that through Amazon, please don't forget to use our link. Okay, it's time to wrap up for this episode and for 2013. But before we go, I'd like to send our best wishes to a very good friend of the program, and that is Steve Vischer. Now, many of you may know Steve from the Airplane Geeks and, of course, Plane Crazy Down Under. Well, Steve's not really had the best of times recently in his life, culminating in him thinking that it was a good idea to play basketball with his kids, and he's completely destroyed his knee. Currently, he's laid up and he's needing all the positive messages we can send him. So please, if you have a moment, send Steve a get better soon message, as he's going to have to go through some pretty tough medical challenges in the coming months, along with a bit of rehabilitation as well. On the positive side, Steve's a captive audience for my constant technical requests about podcasting. So get well soon. Yeah, let's cut to the chase. And from the extended family, get back in the editing seat as soon as possible. Steve, all our very, very best wishes to you. We hope that you feel a little bit better soon and get back onto the road again. Yeah. Okay. We would like to thank White Hearts. We also want to thank Peter Dixon for their contributions. And, of course, all of today's 12-day product suppliers who have so handsomely supported the show. and many of them have given something back to you. We would especially like to thank Doug Worrell, though, and Skyrocket Cafe this year for supporting Extended. And finally, before we go, we'd like to thank Amy Parkin for joining us. Amy, we hope you've enjoyed the show.
Thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
Great. It's great to have you, Amy. And of course, we will keep the pods challenges going. Show notes for this episode, the accompanying pictures and links for the topics we've covered can be found on our website and on our Facebook page. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter as well. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. Tim, where can we find you online?
Okay, you can find me on the www.aerosociety.com. That's the Royal Aeronautical Society's website. And I'm tweeting on Twitter at RESTimR.
And Gareth.
GlobalAviationResource.com and Gareth_Springer for me on Twitter. And I just wanted to say, Amy, thank you for joining us tonight, but thank you so much for all your support throughout the month as well. It's lovely to know that you're out there, somebody's out there and listening and getting so involved. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for all your challenges, Amy.
Yeah, thanks very much, Amy. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well on Facebook at xtpmedia. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Goodbye, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, and Happy Christmas, and hope to see you all in the new year.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Merry Christmas and a happy festive season to you all. And remember to stay tuned into this frequency, Extended, the ETOPS aerospace program and Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
There's actually, no, you know, maybe three or four.
I'm guessing F-35 Brontosaurus doesn't really roll up.
We have to have an
air. Oh dear, here we go.
Hi, I'm French's Peters.
Oh, yeah, it's also a good one. Yeah.
You're a superstar. I've got that. You're an advertiser. We'll get you as our voiceover. Man, next time round.
Sometimes, Amy, Peter talks to us for quite a long time with his microphone muted. Tim and I sit here in complete silence.
Unfortunately,
I
can hear lots of breaths.
Nobody breathe, please.
No breathing.
Sorry about that, folks. Should we give it a crack?
Yeah, come on, I have celebrities on at 9 o'clock.
And joining me today are my co-presenters, editor of Global Aviation. And also joining us today is a guest presenter, the challenger. Oh, for God's sake. Right, bear with me 1 second. This isn't rocket science. So that'll be 7 and 6. Are you still with us, Gareth?
Yeah, perfect.
What was it you were drinking before you came on?
I'll call it Ribena.
You're sleeping in the corner, aren't you?
We've checked out that if you checked out nobody else is using pod then.
Oh, I haven't checked actually. Did you check, Peter?
It's going to be a very short hashtag, ladies and gentlemen.
Gareth, how about you? It's a difficult one to follow, really. Hello, Gareth.
Sorry, I was just I just started to say something then and realised I was muted.
So after all that critiquing...
I've been too conscientious with my mute button this evening. Okay. Either that or hold your breath until it's your turn to talk.
Oh, dear. You see, do you see why we've got 4 or 5 minutes worth of outtakes, Amy?
Extend it!
This is XTP Media.